The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner creator of FSW Future Stars Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you hanging in there nowadays?
Hey, you know, this is the very first COVID edition of the DeFalco File. So I guess we'll see how it goes. You know, if I have an uncontrollable cough, I'll probably turn the audio off for a minute.
Yeah, so anyone who's listening, if you do hear Joe disappear, he's just taking his COVID cough break. And that's yes. Perfectly acceptable. And our guest today is someone who's coming along very, very quickly in the wrestling community and is really shining out here at Future Stars Wrestling. And that is one half of the Bad Bitches, Mr. Jay Vidal. Jay, how you doing, man?
Oh, man, I cannot complain. Life is good over here. Nice, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm over here in the Vidal Estates in the undisclosed location in Las Vegas.
Say hi to Matt for me, will you?
If at any point I may or may not live with Matt Vandergriff. Joe, if at any time, don't worry, if you start coughing, I'll just hot tag in and you don't got to worry about it, all right? I'll take over for you.
Jay, you know, I'm noticing right away the Gangrel Wrestling Academy shirt. Before you got to Las Vegas, this was your starting ground. What was it like training there? And at what point did you hear about Future Stars Wrestling and decide to make your way this way?
Wow. Well, actually, I started my training initially in 2016, February of 2016. And I started at another school, which will not be named. And Gangrel was actually a trainer over there. And he, from day one, just took me under his wing. And what he thought that the trainer over there wasn't doing right, he pulled me aside and say, hey, you know, like, try this instead. And he took me under his wing so much that he was like, hey, come give me car rides. Even though he had his own car, we lived in the same area. And all the way there and all the way back, it would just be lectures on wrestling, on, you know, what to do in the business, how to get booked. Unfortunately, at the place where I was, they were very strict on taking bookings. Like, the promoter was like, we don't want you working anywhere else. So for my first 2 years in wrestling, I actually just wrestled like once a month or once every other month in one location. And Gangrel was a big proponent of just saying, hey, yeah, they're not doing things right over here. He opened up his own school. And for about the past 3 years, I was training over there. And so I was looking up. I always wanted to. I actually grew up out in Henderson, Nevada for a small amount of my life. From when I was 2 years old to about, so I was like, I want to say 11 years old. And then we moved down to Miami. And I just always wanted to move back. And Future Stars of Wrestling was always that place to go to.
How did you hear about Future Stars of Wrestling? Was it through the internet? Was it through relationships you might have still had over here? What takes someone on the East Coast, you know, what is it that caught your eye? How did you, being removed from the West Coast, hear about Vegas wrestling, man?
Man, I just, I was honestly wanting to move back to Vegas. And the very first thing that pops up when I search professional wrestling in Las Vegas or professional wrestling school was Future Stars Wrestling. And I've been keeping up with Future Stars Wrestling literally since 2017, 2018. And I'd been wanting to do the move over here. I just actually didn't want to leave like Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum until I felt like I was ready to, and I could represent Gangrel in the best way possible and not come over here, you know, green and then wear his shirt and him say, oh no, I don't know who trained him.
So Joe, what is it like for you as someone who runs a school to have someone who has the kind of training that Jay got with Gangrel then come to your school and basically say, hey, I'm moving here and I want to participate, I want to learn? Is it something that you're always cautious about, willing to give them the chance, but also know that a lot of the guys who you know, do make a move, might make another move at some point, or end up dropping out, not being seen for, you know, months on end? Is that something that you look at when someone comes to train? Are you upfront and honest in what it takes for them to make it in this industry, I guess?
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of times you get a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails from people that, hey, I want to move to Vegas, I want to train at FSW, and, you know, a small amount have what they claim is experience. Some are brand new. So everybody is going to be different when it comes to that. And the bottom line is, when Jay came by, he ended up coming in really as a student of Sin Bodhi's, because the relationship between Sin and Gangrel is pretty tight. So he kind of came in as one of Sin's new students who trains through us, you know. And after probably a few training sessions, all of a sudden you start to hear the whispers, hey, that Jay Vidal kid, he's pretty good. You want to check him out. He looks pretty decent. You know, and you're always looking for somebody that you can immediately use on shows. You know, it's kind of similar. We have a young kid now, Chase Bell, who was like, oh, yeah, I trained in Louisiana for a few years and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, hey, did you train at Luke Hawk School? He's like, no. And it was something that we never really heard of. So immediately I put Chase Bell in with Ice Williams, and they had a pretty shitty match. You know what I mean? But as he grew comfortable, you could see that the skill level was there. Same thing with Jay Vidal, that you saw, you know, there was some rust there. It's also getting used to people. But it's seeing that tangible that you feel can be an asset to, you know, your roster. Right. And I remember the first time I saw Jay Vidal wrestle in a match. I believe it was at Beers and Body Slams, and it was against Douglas James. And I was extremely impressed, you know, and we had gone back and forth, you know. His original character was some ecstasy driven, what's it called? I forgot the term right now. You know, EDM, you know. that was his first gimmick, which I thought was the shits. So now you have to overcome that. And it was like, you know. So, but the bottom line was they just had a match. It wasn't storyline driven. It was just two guys going out there. And you say, wow, this kid can really go. So now all of a sudden it makes your mind kind of wander a little and think, hey, you know, what's a good option for him? And his idea was way different than my idea initially. You know, he is that very outward going guy, kind of Adrian Adonis-ish. Very flamboyant. And I personally felt that, you know, there's always the escalators and the ceilings. And I felt that he wouldn't be able to go past a certain ceiling because he was relying too much on that character than his wrestling ability, which I thought far outweighed his character, because he just got out of one that wasn't a character. It was terrible. And then he was going on to the other one, which, again, an outwardly flamboyant gay character doesn't always sit well.
Right.
You know? And then I remember on New Year's Eve last year, we decided to do a New Year's show. And there was a guy out of Arizona, and his name was Parada. And he came in and pretty much did the exact gimmick that Jay Vidal was looking to do. And he came in there, and the crowd really ate it up. And I remember Funny Bone put him over at the end of the match. And it was, again, another day where a new star was born. And I felt if Jay Vidal was going to go with the gimmick he was going to go with, the best way to do it was to have Parada, who kind of had been doing that for a while, and let's see if these guys can sync. And we kind of brought him out his heels, and immediately the fans loved him. So all of a sudden, we had a new top-tier babyface tag team that we created in a matter of weeks.
Wow. Jay, that's... I mean, how was it for you? I guess the first thing being, with your initial character, what was it that had you playing essentially the party boy? And did you feel that was a good fit? And what was your idea for a character after that, before stumbling onto, you know, this great concept for the Bad Bitches?
So initially, it was a few years back that I actually, it's a funny story. I used to go to raves a lot.
Sure.
Like a lot. Like when I say party a lot, like go to raves, you know, and there was a point when I kind of believed in the character. And then there was a point when I outgrew the character, and I outgrew the character long before coming to Vegas, probably a year or two before coming to Vegas. I remember I went to Ultra 2018. And by this point, I had been like 6 months into Gangrel school, where he retrained me from the ground up, you know, got rid of my bad habits from the old school. And, you know, Gangrel's a very caring, like, I cannot say enough good things about him. I remember he pulled me aside one day after I missed a show to go to a music festival. And he said, "Mijo, you know, I care about you, but if you don't want to, you're not going to put in the work, then I don't want you at my school. I don't need to take your money. Simple as that." And he's like, "You got potential, but you're wasting it. Going over there, like, you know, partying, you know, getting messed up." And it clicked in my head. And then, like, you know, I got rid of the raving lifestyle. I got rid of my raving friends. And so, like, coming over here, I actually had this idea long before coming to Vegas. I ordered the gear like 8 months before coming to Vegas, but like the gear maker just took forever with it. So I would have started way earlier. But I always thought in wrestling that you should be who you are times 10. Yeah. And if you see me, like, you know, hanging around any of the other wrestlers in the back, this is like who I am times 10. When I first started doing the Jay Vidal gimmick, it was actually, I think, the very last match that I had with the, I'm sorry, going back to the Darth Raver, it was called Jaden Rhythm. I remember Joe DeFalco. He flat out told me, he's like, "That is the worst name I've ever heard in my life, Jaden Rhythm." If you ever talk to Joe DeFalco, like, you know, you could go on like a 5-minute rant, just full on roasting you. And he just went on like, "That is the absolute worst name I've ever heard in my life." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." Like, I can argue with it. I'm like, "Yeah, you're right." Right. And it was actually Joe's Halloween show. It wasn't the beer. It was a Halloween show. I remember because it was Matt Vandergriff went up against Sin Bodhi that night, and it was really cold out. I can remember that. It was freezing out. Like, you could see your breath. And Douglas James and I just looked at each other like, Swarm up, let's do this. But that I wasn't actually meant to be facing Douglas James that day. I think somebody might have pulled out or something. And I got a text from Joe DeFalco early in the morning. I was just going to go, like, you know, as a student to help, you know, set up everything, pay your dues as you should. And I got a text from Joe saying, make sure you bring your gear today. You're going to be going up against Douglas James. And I said, thank God, because prior to this, like, at FSW, something that humbles you, like, you have to prove yourself. Yeah. You have to, like, it doesn't matter where you come from. Like, you're going to be put in, like, these six-man matches or, like, you know, these four-way tag, and, like, you have to stand out. I feel like that is the best challenge. That's the best way that I grew from that, because all of 2019 was just, like, me hustling to try to stand out on every one of those matches I would be put on.
Sure.
And then going into the Jay Vidal gimmick, once I finally got to do it and, you know, finally got to get out there, like, first of all, I remember my first match as Jay Vidal was against Damian Drake. And it was right after the Douglas James match. And I remember going out there and just, like, feeling comfortable. It didn't feel like I was playing a character. It felt like I was being myself times 100. Nice. And I'd met Parada before. Believe it or not, Parada, I believe, was one of my first tag team partners in FSW when we had I was still doing the Raver gimmick, and we had, like, a six-man tag match. I think it was me, Parada, and Hero Lou, maybe, and I could be wrong, don't quote me. And I forgot who you guys were. Maybe Vinny, VIP Vinny, Laz, and somebody else. I can't remember off the top of my head. But so me and Parada had already, like, you know, kind of clicked a little bit. Joe ended up bringing him in for the New Year show, and, you know, that's when Parada absolutely stood out. And not soon after, I remember going, I think it was a show right after, I get over there and I just sat down, put my bag down, like, ooh, like, you know, in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to be, like, you know, like a six-man match or something, you know, time to try to stand out again. And Parada comes over to me and he's like, I think we're the Bad Bitches. And I'm like, huh? He's like, there's a name on there and it says Bad Bitches. I think that's us. And I'm like, what? Like, I know I'm a bad, what? No. Like, and then we get there and we look at the card, and surely it says Bad Bitches. No names underneath. So you still don't know. You know, it's like a Sky High versus these guys versus Bad Bitches. And then Joe comes in, walking in, and he's like, you're the Bad Bitches. And I'm like, well, shit, I guess we're the Bad Bitches. Excuse my language.
So Joe, wait, is that, Joe, is that how it went down, where it was shrouded in secrecy who the Bad Bitches were?
You know, I've always been the creator of names. So being that they were that flamboyant characters, I know Moz used to call herself a bad bitch all the time, and I felt what better than the two flamboyant guys to be called the Bad Bitches. And obviously, as per usual, it's stuck. And now everywhere they go, people know who the Bad Bitches are.
And you know, Jay, with that, how did you and Parada, how do you then go from, okay, you go into this match, you don't really know that you are the Bad Bitches, but you are those characters, essentially. You've just been given a name. What goes about it for you guys then to start talking over how you take it and develop it, you know, whether it be through how your partnership works in the ring or how your partnership would work out of the ring, in terms of now you are going to have an opportunity to do some pretty sweet merchandise and, you know, things that you can think of that usually when you're a singles wrestler, you're just kind of in control. But when you're, you know, in a tag team or in a faction, you're part of a, you know, comprehensive unit. What was that relationship like, and how did you guys feel out where you guys were going to go with this?
I think from the get-go, as soon as we found out that we were teaming together, I remember talking to him and I said, yeah, I think we could do something special. Like, I remember just looking at him and I said, like, I think we could do something special here. Like, let's not just, you know, go out there separately, or like, you know, go out there like two singles competitors in a tag match. I'm like, let's go out there and let's go out there like a team. I said, you still do your little thing, right? Where like you raise your hand and like, you know, you look to the back. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, open your legs wide. I'm going to start crawling through you. And, you know, like right underneath. And, you know, like you go this way. And like we practice our entrance right before the show. Literally maybe like 15 minutes before the show started, we had the idea of what song he wanted to use. I brought up a song. It was a little too hood. He brought up a song. It was a little too, like, you know, pop. And we found like that mesh in between with the Beyonce Nicki Minaj song. Yeah. And it was great. And when we were going over our match, I was just like, oh, you hit the, you know, the Naomi, the rear view, you know? And I'm like, what if I do a leapfrog? And then there you go right there with the rear view. And poor Mondo Roxy was the first one to take it. And if you watch that match back, he just took it head on. if you ask him, he said that is like, it almost knocked him out. Cause he just like, you know, I jumped. So like, you know, he got his head right up and it was right there and it just hit him full force. Shit. He did not stop.
Oh man. Oh, better Mondo than myself or Joe. So, you know, Joe, as what I like about, as Jay talks about how it's coming together for them, he just has this excitement. Is that something that you like to see when your suggestion starts to manifest into these characters? Is it something that you are either critical on if they're not going the way you see it should be going, or is it something, you know, obviously if you see it's going well, but if you see something that maybe they're doing that's a little different than what was in your mind, how do you take what they're doing and what your vision is and kind of compromise in the end?
Well, when I get involved, I get involved. So, you know, I give more freedom than pretty much anybody. But I also pay attention and I see things. It's kind of like early on with the Unguided. It didn't go the way, you know, they had an idea of where they wanted to go. And as I listened to the idea and how I thought it would proceed, early on, it didn't mesh at all. And a bunch of minds came together to bring it where it is today. You know, you can't credit one person, you know, but I do get credit for it. And Matt gets credit and Damian Drake gets credit. But the thing is, with the Bad Bitches, it was kind of like, okay, we have this idea. How is it going to grow? I put a lot of tag teams together that have shit the bed because all they cared about is, and this is local teams that they could have worked together, but they really chose not to. Instead of being a mid-card or, again, these guys started off as a low-card tag team. We didn't know what was going to happen with them. You know, there's always that pecking order. And where we say the A list and the B list. Well, Bad Bitches started at the bottom of that B list. And within no time, they kind of became the head of that B list. And all of a sudden, now they're sniffing the A list. And that's because they're working together to become as good as they can be. They're not content with feuding with Creature Feature and the Suavecitos and teams that are on the rise. They want to go after the RMB and Death Proof, and they want to prove that they're as good as the Unguided. And when you have a couple of guys, as I always said, it's about getting the opportunities. And if you succeed, you'll get more opportunities. And you can see from when they first started working as tag matches to a couple of months later to a couple of months later, you could see that Joe DeFalco liked what was going on with the Bad Bitches. You know, there's a lot of teams that we're trying to fight to get positions for. And, you know, because of the pandemic and things that happened, you know, Parada didn't always make it out once we restarted everything in March.
Right.
Or closed down in March, we reopened again. We probably didn't run stuff till July or August. You know, Jay was put in some single stuff where, again, he continually excelled. And we knew the skill level was there. Then we opened it up a little bit and had an idea and bringing Parada back in that we had the Bad Bitches and the former Bonus Boys and, you know, we were going to have a match. And shockingly enough, we were kind of pitching ideas and what they were looking to do. And I didn't think it made certain sense of the beatdown after the Bonus Boys would win the match. And it was like, well, that kind of destroys them twice.
Yeah.
And the Bonus Boys actually came up with the idea and said, hey, well, what if the Bad Bitches pull the upset and then we lay them out? And I thought that was a perfect idea. That was the way to jump, because we always talk about there's Unguided, there's Death Proof, there's the RMB. Those are the three teams.
Right.
In the A-list. And you really can't have three teams in an A-list. You need four teams because that way they can kind of, you know, bandy back and forth. And, you know, that was the day. And, you know, we eagerly watched. Great match. Crowd was really into Parada and Jay. And when they pulled the upset, you know, the crowd went crazy inside the arena, you know, and then they got beat down pretty hard. And unfortunately, this past week, we were going to do our return and have the rematch between the two teams. But now it's an eagerly anticipated rematch because you got a team that's been tag team champions two or three times, and you got the fastest rising tag team, you know, in FSW along with the Unguided.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we've built up a feud that was nowhere to be seen. And that's why we continually grow as a company, you know, because of the fresh new things that we got going on and always bringing in that new talent that, you know, as singles guys, you know, Josh can always be considered, you know, he's a guy that I look at as a future No Limits champion.
Sure.
But, you know, he might be a future No Limits champion and tag team champion. You know, he's got that much, you know, skill level, you know, personality wise, you know, he's without a doubt a guy you can bust balls with. And, you know, if you're around when we're there, you know, don't expect it to be politically correct because it's not going to be, you know, and Josh takes it as well as he can give it. And I'm pretty sure there's some people that are a little uncomfortable on certain things that are said, but we are all adults and we are all approving and we just have a good fun time. And it also makes it a lot easier when you're having fun doing what you love to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Jay, for you, what is that perspective? You know, for me, when I look at gay characters, and, you know, obviously there goes so many different routes you can take. And I love the fact that you're tapping into yourself and just heightening yourself. But you did make the list this year for the QWI 100, 2020's best LGBTQ pro wrestlers. You were number 40 this year. Next year, you'll probably be number 10, right? We're, you know, moving up and cracking the top list here, though. But it's nice that you're being recognized on something like this from SB Nation, because when I look at you, I look at a wrestler who happens to be gay. A lot of times what you end up seeing is a gay person who's a wrestler, and it's, you know, it just is used to the wrong advantage. Your thing is, you're a wrestler first. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to chime in quickly.
Yeah, then, please.
When we were having these discussions with Jay and the character, I specifically told him that the way the character develops, you need to be Jake Atlas. Jake Atlas is a wrestler who happens to be gay.
Yeah.
And I thought that Jay was going a little overboard on being a gay wrestler who happened to wrestle, you know, and I felt that the money in him long term is being Jake Atlas in that situation. Yeah. Now, he's kind of adapted and they're in that realm. And there's plenty of time for characters to develop and them. But I remember specifically that was the one thing I didn't want him to go too over the top, because then I would just think it was a playoff just being gay, and eventually people would sour on that character. It's like, be true to yourself, but also excel at what you're good at.
Right.
And no, I felt that needed to be said at that time, because I felt he might be going a little over the top where I felt that it wasn't really necessary.
Yeah, Jay, what are your thoughts on that?
No, actually, I agree 110% with the both of you. And Joe actually told me that after my first match with Damian Drake. And he, you know, said, hey, like, you know, don't let it be this either. Like my first match with Damian Drake, I remember just like feeling out, it was really testing the waters. You know, I do feel, especially once you do try a new character out, you know, you try those levels to see, you know, right, which frequency is going to go best and how can I click with the crowd, but also deliver. Cause being an LGBTQ wrestler, it's, you're almost facing these stigmas already going into it to, yeah, where people expect you to wrestle like a woman, but still be able to hang on with the guys, right? Yeah. And I don't mean wrestle like a woman in too negative of a connotation, unfortunately. And I credit schools like Future Stars of Wrestling and Gang Girls Wrestling Asylum, because they don't treat their women any different than they treat their men when it comes to training. Those girls do not get babied. That's why you see girls like Sandra Moon, like Alice Blair, and you know, Maserati, like these girls, Lacey Ryan, they could hang with the guys.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about that, because unfortunately in other schools, you know, and I feel like that happens with LGBTQ guys as well, where, you know, maybe,
yeah,
the trainers don't take them seriously. So they're like, okay, you can't do a leapfrog one instead of doing something, you know, 100 times until you get it right. Oh, you do it like 2 times. Yeah, whatever. It's okay. Whatever. And, unfortunately, that tends to happen a lot. And when it comes to other LGBTQ wrestlers, too, I know exactly what you're talking about, to where it's almost like they're so flamboyant that they forget that this is, you know, yeah, that this isn't a sense of sport. You know, that you got to go out there and perform, and you got to go out there. That's my goal, was always being an LGBTQ wrestler. And I remember when I first thought about doing this gimmick initially, because as I said, like I ordered the gear and all before even moving to Vegas, I talked to Gangrel about it, and Gangrel was in the same boat that everybody else, including Joe, was on. You know, like he didn't want me doing like something too flamboyant to where it doesn't, you know,
sure,
my wrestling ability doesn't get seen. And I remember him telling, and even when I went back during quarantine, because I had to move back to South Florida, unfortunately. I got kicked out of the place where I was living at. They said, oh, you can't pay the bill. This was before the stimulus check was a thing.
Right.
I got kicked out, so I had to, unfortunately, you know, resettle, you know, reset and everything. And I went back to Florida, and I, you know, Gangrel got to see this character for the first time. And I remember when I would get in the ring with him, he'd say, okay, you need to start picking your moments to when to be this flamboyant character. Because if you're doing it, you know, the whole time throughout the whole match, it means nothing. But if you pick your moments, you know, and then in between, you just like, you're this killer. And that's where the money is.
That makes sense. Joe, with having someone like Gangrel in the fold, or let's even say, you know, Maserati and others working at OVW, how is it for you when you see the wrestlers go back to those places and then come back to Vegas? Can you see some kind of growth in them by getting that extra experience and having those extra eyes that are, you know, very, very experienced in the business?
Well, like when Jay came in, you know, he had that base already because of Gangrel. But when he came to FSW, we helped grow it. You know, we didn't try to change anything. We saw his ability, and I think we did a great job that
absolutely
helped him get to where he is now. That I'm not going to say he couldn't have gotten there with Gangrel, but now we had new eyes.
Yeah.
That also are very smart in the business. You know, Gangrel looks at it this way. Well, we got Sin and Kenny and D'Lo and all these other guys looking at it from a little bit of a different perspective. And while Gangrel knew him when he was a baby in the business and nurtured him to grow, we also found, hey, there's these things that we feel you can work on, because again, he's still transitioning as a character and as a wrestler. You know, he's getting to the point where he left and he's getting pretty good, but he wasn't great yet. He wasn't ready yet. And then we were able to, you know, put him under our wing, and then not only wrestle in matches, again, wrestling in matches, but the day-to-day of now going to a wrestling school where he gets to work with Matt Vandergriff and Damian Drake and Lacey Ryan and Cody and Remy and all these guys and Ice Williams and this huge talent pool that he gets to train and work on new things with.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I always scream and yell about the school. As good as the trainers are, it's the fact that the students that go there, I can't tell you a better training school that has as much talent as we do. I truly believe we have the best talent around. So how do you get better? Well, you wrestle people better than you. And there's always somebody better than you when you come into FSW. You never know who's going to be in there. You know, TJ Perkins walks in sometimes, helps train, but sometimes he just pops in to train. And Daivari, hey, I need to roll around. I got to go do MLW. Hey, I got to go do this. And all of a sudden, you have all these minds and skill levels that are there. And in most cases, offering advice to the guys who are trying to get to that next level. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I love the most about everything that's going on, because you never know who's just going to pop in and offer advice. Like I said, you know, with Lacey, you got Tom Howard. He shows up and, you know, he's laid back and quiet. But when he watches wrestling, you know, if he sees some shitty wrestling going on, he ain't going to let it continue without saying something.
Joe, can I say something to add to the point that you were making earlier?
Oh, you can always add something.
I really do highly credit all the character work that I learned over here to Future Stars of Wrestling. I always say, like, I got my bread and butter, like, you know, my basics, my how to hit the ropes, where to be at the right time, et cetera, over at Gangrel's. And all the character stuff especially, of course, growing on my wrestling, that too, but all the character stuff especially, I got it here. I remember bringing this character up to Sin Bodhi right before starting it, and his, you know, he had like these out there suggestions that ended up finally, you know, clicking in my head and working for me. Like, you know, go in the mirror. Like, how would your character, how would this character that you want to bring out look like if he was mad? How would he look like if he was sad? How would he look like if he was, you know, scared but wanted to fight, but scared, but, you know, and it's all these, and including people like Cody, and who is an amazing trainer over there at Future Stars Wrestling. Like, he is, I cannot put the guy over enough. Like, a genuine soul that will literally watch every single match that happened on the show that night and come back with critiques. And people usually like to hang out with people in wrestling who tell them that they're doing great, but that's never how you grow. If your inner circle is just telling you all the stuff that you're doing great and not how to get better, then they probably don't want to see you grow, or they don't know enough to tell you. That's why over here too, I made it my business, like, surround myself with people who I feel that are better than me, you know, the Damien Drakes and the Matt Vandergrifts and the Lacey Ryans, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're all way better than you. Yeah.
You know, like, they build me up, and, you know, they push me to do better. Lacey, I can't say enough good things about Lacey Ryan. Like, you know, it's thanks to her that my in-ring cardio is great, because she will flat out, you know, be just like running cardio drills. I used to hate cardio, and she's, come on, Jay, get in here. He's like, I don't know. No, we're going to do this. Okay, let's do it.
You know, Joe, when you look at how you get an audience to respond, and once you see their response to the Bad Bitches, did you initially think of them as heels or faces, and did the audience's embracing of them ever change where you saw them going?
Well, like I said, when Parada came in for the New Year's show, he seemed to be genuinely appreciated by the fans, and Jay didn't really have much of a character at the time. He was the EDM guy, so, you know, the only thing people may have noticed was like, yeah, this kid seems to be pretty good. But when you put him together and then you have him wrestle popular team like Sky High, well, you're immediately going to assume that they're supposed to be the heels. So you tell them to come out and be kind of douchey, and but them being kind of douchey is their shtick. So now the crowd's kind of liking them busting balls and doing what they're doing, and you immediately see that, you know, they want to like these guys, and there's nothing I'm going to do that's going to change their mind.
Right.
They either like you or they don't like you. And, you know, it's happened many times with whether it was Remy or Hammerstone or Graves. Those heel turns didn't last very long. You know, Hammerstone became the top heel in FSW through hard work. We pandemic, we come back. People see a guy that they respect who's been in FSW for years, who's, despite the fact that he has grown as a superstar and can wrestle pretty much anywhere in the world, he chooses to wrestle in Vegas at FSW. So the fans have nothing to do but appreciate that guy. So when you like somebody personally and you appreciate everything they do, nobody wants to boo that person. Yeah. It's like when you're a heel and you bring friends, we try to tell you, hey, it really helps if your friends boo you and not cheer you, because we're trying to get you to be a heel, because that's what your role is. And in some cases it works, but in a lot of cases it doesn't. So you go where the crowd tells you to go.
Yeah.
You know, there's gray areas. You know, Ice Williams is that real tweener that if he wrestles somebody who is hated, he will be cheered more. But when he wrestled Funny Bone, they were booing him out of the building. If he wrestles Chris Bay, they're going to boo him out of the building. And that's also okay, because it's 2021. It's not 1999. And there has to be a heel, and there has to be a face. I personally love the heel and the face because it's easier to get somebody to root for the good guy. And when somebody does something dastardly, you want the fans to want to see that guy getting beat up. You know, in FSW, there's not a huge amount. You know, Nick Bugatti, Maserati, no matter what they've done, they've been around forever. And they're just not liked as characters. You know, Lights, Camera, Action is a newer group that Braxton is one of the most annoying people that you're going to see. So he is utterly disliked, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's guys that were in transitioning and they kind of come across as heels, but they also kind of come across as faces. And there's only so many people that, you know, a Hero Lou is a young up and coming guy that the crowd really seems to like. Why is that? Well, they see this big, you know, strapping Samoan guy who's got some personality. He looks like a million bucks. The FSW fans look at him and say, hey, that's a guy down the line that we could see that's one of our guys that made it there.
Yeah.
And will quickly grow to that person. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's the most difficult thing, is for people to give a shit. You know, you need to do something that makes people give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And you know, we had this transition, you know, a tag team that very quickly has had some excellent matches, the Suavecitos. And they were put in a bad situation. We had them coming out as baby faces, and then they would wrestle a cool heel like the Unguided. Well, the Unguided have a lot of juice when it comes to the FSW fans. So they want to like the Unguided. They like Damian Drake. They really like Matt Vandergriff. So they're going to see this exciting tag team that looks like they're the next, you know, tag team that's going to make it in FSW. And the crowd wants to cheer the Unguided because the Suavecitos are this young team, kind of brashy. You know, Danny's kind of got that attitude. So they're not liked even though they're babyface. Then they step in the ring with the Bonus Boys. And the Bonus Boys have been around forever, tag team champions, good guys, bad guys. Again, to the long-term fans, the Bonus Boys, everybody knows them. So even though they're heels, the Suavecitos are not considered that team that's going to beat the Bonus Boys. So it's hard for the fans to get behind them. Now they go 2-for-2, the Suavecitos. They lose both matches, but they have really good matches with both of the teams. So now it's like, where do we go? So then we had them work Death Proof because we're trying to get these young guys experience wrestling tag teams. Again, knock it out of the park. 3-for-3. All good matches. But Death Proof's like the most popular tag team in FSW. So, yeah. Of course, the Suavecitos are booed out of the building. And we kind of played into that where they had an issue with Sky High, who the crowd gets behind also, and felt that the only way we're going to get some notoriety on the Suavecitos is for them to be heels. And for them to have a chip on their shoulder because they came out week after week giving everything they had to the FSW fans. And guess what? They didn't give a fuck. Yeah. Well, you didn't give a fuck about us. We don't give a fuck about you. Fuck you all. We're doing this for ourselves. So, you know, we're going to see where that goes in that situation. And, you know, the Suavecitos and Bad Bitches, you know, that could be something down the line that we're going to see because, you know, we got a lot of these tag teams. And there's going to be a lot of rotation and there's a lot of jockeying for position. And as much as everybody loves everybody, everybody still strives to be the best. And as long as it's a good, healthy competition, it just makes everybody better.
Jay, with with you being together with Parada and having a chemistry, do you feel like do you enjoy tag team wrestling and that aspect of storytelling, or was it easier for you to absorb single wrestling and how you tell a story as a singles wrestler?
So I quickly started learning that tag team wrestling is this whole other monster.
Right.
And, you know, people try to see, you ask any professional wrestler out there, you know, which one, a lot of them would prefer to have singles match. Even me, you know, every now and again, I love having, you know, a singles match. But tag, I've grown to love. And it was love-hate, because, like, at first it was like, I remember when we were when I was tagging with Parada, and, you know, we were just having, like, these matches that just felt like too, even though we were a tag team, it still felt to us like, you know, one would get in there and then do something, then the other one would get in there and do something. It didn't felt like, you know, a cohesive unit.
Right.
It wasn't until after the pandemic that we both, like, started looking deep into tag team wrestling and saying, hey, okay, there's an art form to this. There's a way, you know, to, like, be able to tell that story that you're a cohesive unit. There's, you know, tag teams that I've studied from, you know, going back to, like, the heavenly bodies, all the way now to, like, FTR. And I remember something that FTR did on AEW that just stood, and it was so simple, and it stood out to me because it made everybody know that their unit, one goes to the other and whispers in his ear. And as he's about to go into, you know, go into the corner, go into the tag rope, he pulls him back and then whispers in his ear. And then they both shake their, and it was just a small thing. And I always think, you know, wrestling is about moments. It's about those small things. The moves, you add the moves on there and, you know, it all meshes well together. But if you could tell me all the moves that you remember from the Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair match, then more power to you. But I remember when he looked at, you know, Ric Flair and said, I'm sorry, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, it's moments. And and singles wrestling, you're able to have those moments in tag team wrestling. Now you're trying to tell that story, but with four people and the referee, because the referee is a bit as much involved in that a lot of times than anybody else is.
Right. When you look at the time you spent at FSW, is there a particular moment that stands out to you as one of those pinnacles where you're just like, yep, I made the right decision to come here?
It was literally, I always knew that I made the right choice coming. I'm a big believer in going with your gut, because every time that I've gone against my gut, it always, like, you know, whether it's been relationships, whether it's been even something as simple as, like, going out one night. I remember I was in Florida and I was like, oh, I'm going to go out. And I was like, something my gut told me not to. I did anyways. I got in a car accident, you know, like, Jesus. That gut feeling. I go by that gut now. And that gut feeling said, go to Vegas. There's something for you over there. And when I went back to Florida, I remember just thinking the whole time, I'm going to go back to Vegas. It's you know what I mean? It's meant to be. Yeah. I remember Joe actually hit me up midway through the quarantine and say, hey, like, you know, like the place, like, you know, ready, you know, type of thing. Like, you know, the always got the door open type of thing. So
I had to offer him the better sin rate. You know what I mean? It was like, back, you know, we're going to charge you what we should charge you. You know, you're not suited.
I think that pinnacle moment was was when I came back. And I remember coming back, I think it was like September 11th or something like that. Maybe, I could be wrong. The show could have been like September. It was around that timeline. And I remember coming in, moving into my new apartment, and I got a text from Joe, and he said, so tomorrow it's going to be you and Lacey Ryan. And I was super excited. I had my first intergender match the year prior against Bryn Thorne.
Okay.
And it just, you know, Bryn Thorne could go. Bryn Thorne's one of those girls that she could go. And I was really worried about having an intergender match prior to that. I remember after, I'm like, oh, I could do intergender matches, you know, with girls that could, you know, hold their own and get in there and, like, you know, look like they belong. And Lacey Ryan, of course, I've trained with her before, man, and I cannot, this is the best compliment that I could give her. When you're in there, she moves like one of the boys.
Yep.
Like, she, like, you know, like everything from the hits, like, you feel, you know, you, it's, and I love that. That's, you know, that's, as the professional wrestler, you love to, somebody who could make their hits look good and you feel it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if it looks, if you feel it and it looks good, money. Yep. But I remember him telling me that. I go over to the show. I was super nervous. I've been wrestling these shows at Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum prior to that, but they were no fan shows because this is before Governor DeSantis over there, like, he opened everything back up.
Right.
At this point, nothing was open around the time that I came back over here to Vegas. So it was like we were doing these no crowd shows. We're just kind of like, you know, already getting used to that, to just playing to, like, you know, the camera audience. It's a whole nother feel. You feel everything a lot more, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And coming back over here, it was like, okay, we got a crowd. And I remember just, like, I was super nervous right before the match. I remember looking over at Lacey and I said, like, what if they don't remember me? Like, it's, that thought just kept creeping in my mind. Like, what if I just come out there and they're just like, and then, like, you know, the one person in the back. So I was nervous, and as soon as I come out, I, like, the crowd reaction, it was an energy that I'd never felt before, and they cheered really hard, and I was so humbled by that. I got in the ring and they started a welcome back chant, and it was something that I did not expect. I remember Joe actually telling me right before the show, hey, like, you know, you're gonna grab the mic and you're gonna cut a promo and, you know, talk about how you're happy to be back and this and that. So for me, that was, for one, that Joe gave me that opportunity to do that was special to me. And even more special was the fact that the crowd remembered me. I cannot tell you enough how that was my favorite moment in professional wrestling in 2020. Of course, there was a lot to choose from, but that was definitely, like, you know, the pinnacle where it clicked in my head, like, yeah, I'm meant to be here. And even I was at the GCW show supporting my good friend Matt Vandergriff, and Sepha Fetu was there. And Sepha actually messaged me when I left from Vegas to Florida initially in March. And he said, hey, Oos, you know, like, do everything that you can. I understand you got to go, but do everything that you can to come back. Like, this is your home over here. Like, you got, like, you know, a connection here with the crowd like none other. And that meant a lot to me. And then when I came back and I saw him over at that GCW show, he's like, what'd I tell you? He's like, I told you that, you know? And I was like, yeah, you're right.
Hey, Joe, as we kind of get close to wrapping here, hearing that from Jay, what does that mean to you to know that guys like Sepha and Bay will give that encouragement, like, hey, this is a home for you, fans appreciate you? What does that mean to have the boys actually keeping the other boys who have that work ethic, who have the talent, around in the area so that, you know, they can develop?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it's amazing. You know, it's when I started this, I did this because I love wrestling. And, you know, I try to treat people with the utmost of respect. I'll bust balls, I'll goof around, but I take this as serious can be done. And when I see people that are putting forth the effort and I see people that want this, you know, I will go out of my way 100-fold to help anybody I can in any situation. You know, whether it's talking to somebody in a bigger company, whether it's trying to send an email to someone, I am always looking to help out. Sometimes a little too much. It's like, you know, people try to get booked elsewhere and different things. And I'll send messages to people that I know in that company or whatever. Hey, maybe you should take a look at this guy. Hey, I have a guy. Can I send you a link? Because I'm so proud of the fact that so many of our guys have so much ability. But it's not only that. It's the fact that they do give back. And Chris Bale will come back in training, and he'll work with a lot of people. And guys like Ice and Shogun are basically put under his wing. And he was taught. And Kevin Cross may have taught him certain things. And then Kevin, you know, does the ultimate put over and puts over Chris Bay before he leaves. You know, he wants this. It's the legacy of Las Vegas wrestling. You know, in 2009, Vegas wrestling didn't exist.
Yeah.
And in 11 years, our legacy is as big as anybody's because of all the hard work that everybody has put into it. And it isn't doing it once or twice a week. It's every single day of putting in the time, putting in the effort, trying to come up with ideas to make things better. You know, the fan base is phenomenal. It's like Jay, you know, said, he comes back and the crowd makes him feel so welcome to be back that how do you not want to perform for these people? You know, and we're talking about a crowd of 40 or 50 people, limited, the hardcore of hardcore FSW fans that, you know, will follow us. You know, I've always said if we had karaoke night tomorrow at the FSW arena, 28 people would show up just to support FSW. You know, we have sponsors. Hey, everybody, you know, we said we can't even sell any food at the FSW arena because everybody would go to Firehouse Subs before the show and buy a Firehouse Sub and not a hot dog or nachos from FSW arena. Because the fans wanted to show love to the people that were showing love to us.
Oh.
And it's like just one giant conglomerate that we've become because of everything, you know, because of the fans, because of the wrestlers, because of the students, you know, because of the staff, because of the production, because of the connections. It's like, you know, unfortunately we repeat ourselves, but that's what every company should strive for. You know, I've seen a lot of companies that, do they even exist anymore? They right. have made no effort to do anything.
Right.
You know, it's like they're not training. They're not running shows. They're not running empty arena shows. You know, we're in a tough time. We're not making money. We can't run shows. We're losing students because of this.
Right.
But the people that are there, they get us 1,000%. And that's the way a business succeeds. You know, it isn't like, hey, how much money are we making this month? Hey, we need to cut stuff down because we're not making any money. It's like that long-term goal is still the long-term goal. And the only problem is, unfortunately, that long-term goal may now be 2022. Or 2023 and not 2021. But, you know, you strive to do it. Did things happen this year that fucking suck? Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's many times I sit here and like, Jesus Christ, this fucking blows. You know, certain issues that you have no control of regarding other people. And all you could try to do is be the best person and the best that you can be. And, you know, that's all I strive to do, you know, and put in the time and put in the effort. There's always going to be haters. There's always going to be people that want to see you fail. And you know what? That's why at times, as much as I love Facebook and stuff to run a wrestling business, it's horrible because the hatred is just mind-boggling that everybody, no matter what is said, will comment negatively just to comment negatively. If you don't feel that way, I know myself, I just ignore it. I might not like something somebody says. I don't feel the need to throw in my two cents to every single issue that is going on. You know, fight the bigger fight.
Yeah. Jay, as we wrap, I'm going to have one more question for Joe. But from your perspective and, you know, being here now for a little while and, you know, having the opportunities that you've been given, for you, where do you see yourself going in the business? What are your aspirations from this point?
Oh, man. I'm definitely, and, you know, my closest of friends, you know, we talk about this constantly, you know, what our goal is, and we are all in getting signed mode. Like, you know, we put it out there in the universe, and, you know, we're getting ready for when preparation meets opportunity. Yeah. That's, you know, that's why you'll see us day in and day out, you know, when it comes to training, like, you know, getting in there, training hard, you know, first in, last out, at least, you know, the days that we can make it there. And we're out, like, me personally speaking for myself, I'm in that mode where I am trying to get signed, because I know that if I put up that effort, if I put up, I refuse to be on my deathbed and wonder what if. Yeah. That's the thing that gets me up every morning. That's the thing that pushes me every day, because I want to know that in this lifetime, I gave it my all. And if, you know, for whatever reason, which again, I going back to intuition, I do got that intuition that everything will be just fine. But for whatever reason, I don't make it, then I can say that I gave it 120%. And when it comes to future and FSW, man, like, what makes me happy is, you know, helping younger people out. Like, I actually came to the school when Ricky and Danny from the Suavecitos were about 3 months in. And something that, you know, I absolutely love those guys, first of all, first and foremost. Something that I do give credit to them is that they would always ask me questions. And even to this day, like, you know, we'll be training, and then, like, you know, Danny will ask me, what could I have done better? I'm like, oh, like, you know, maybe you did this, but maybe you could do this instead. And, you know, people like Alice Blair, the little, you know, short, she's, you know, hungry, and she's quiet and timid, but she will come up to me and, you know, she'll say, hey, could you help me work on this move? Could you help me work on chaining? Could you? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like, and, you know, Nick Xander's another one, Breath the Threat, you know, like, there's so much talent to look out for that's hungry, that asks questions. And to me, like, you know, what makes me happy is seeing things that I told them and, like, you know, they start applying into their matches.
Sure.
And so that's, and of course, you know, whether it be the tag team belts or the No Limits belt or even the, when I woke up a little bit, get that heavyweight championship. But, like, you know, there's a championship is in my foreseeable future. It's, you know, it's like Joe says, it's that healthy competition. You know, we all want to be the best.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes FSW so great, is that since we all want to be the best, we're all pushing each other to be better. We're all, you know, trying to one-up each other. And in doing so, you know, in the healthiest way possible, we're bringing up future stars of wrestling, and we're bringing up Las Vegas wrestling. And being here, Las Vegas wrestling now has such a special place in my heart, because I understand how it's, you know, been slept on in the past, and how now it's just starting, you know, to get, like, that notoriety where I look around and I'm like, yeah, no, this should have had the notoriety. And, you know, it's thanks to guys paving the way, like Cross or, like, you know, Chris Bay. That's another one who definitely has inspired me, because I remember just, like, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before I decided, I was on the road and, you know, picking his brain, and then he got signed. I'm like, wow, like, you know, it's achievable.
Yeah.
That goal is there and it is achievable.
All right. Final question, Joe. We have, a great, sitcom in, the history of television, and The Odd Couple. You have Felix, who is the neat freak. Oscar is the person who is a slob. Between Matt Vandegrift and Jay, which is the Felix, and which do you think is the Oscar? And you're still on mute, Joe.
Oh, there you go. I had a coughing outbreak earlier, so I didn't want to cough in front of everybody. You know. being Puerto Rican, you know, I think Jay was instilled at a very young age not to be a slob. You know, Puerto Rican mothers, abuelas, grandmothers, you know, they whoop some ass if you left a mess. So I would think it was a hard case, but I would have to say Matt would have to be the Oscar.
Is that true, Jay? Is Matt the sloppy one in the apartment?
Oh, man. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Yeah. I love him with all my heart, but I'm like, oh, man. I'm like the, you know, I am the absolute super duper neat freak where, you know, I have to be like, Matt, and every time he knows he's going to hear, like, he knows he's going to hear me, like, you know, say something whenever I say, Matt, I love you. Because I started off, you know, with like a full, like, I want you to know I love you. Like, you know, at first, when I first started saying that, before saying, like, you know, please don't put this there, or please, like, you know, he would, like, you know, be like, I love you too. And then, like, I'd cut him off and, like, you know, flat out be like, okay, please don't, you know, please put your protein powder over the sink. So, but yeah. He starts adjusting. I try to say it's like a housewife with, like, you know, it's living with a straight man. That's what I'm doing. I'm living with a straight man, and I know exactly what that means now. And the gays always make jokes about it, but, like, you know, I know exactly what it means to live with a straight man. And oh my god,
you know, but I was gonna say never discount an unguided bad bitch's love triangle, you know what I'm saying? You know, Damian Drake gets jealous of all the time Matt Vandergriff spends with Jay Vidal.
Oh, man, that's a storyline right there. I thought you pitched something to me along the lines of a Sky High, something with a Sky High where we take one of the Sky, I don't know, like, what was it? Take Dave. Alita, yes.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. Well, on that note, gentlemen, that's going to wrap us for this episode of the DeFalco Files. Again, keep your eyes on the FSW Network for $6.99. You get a bunch of content. It's really worth your while. Also, follow on YouTube. Twitch, their channel on Twitch is great and is constantly running. Of course, listen to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting and all what we offer you guys. Thank you again, Jay, for joining us. And Joe, thank you as always. And everyone, until next week, we'll see you then.